evening. When council holds public hearings on zoning applications, they are legislative hearings because council uses information obtained during the hearings to decide whether to adopt an ordinance to amend the comprehensive zoning map in the manner requested by the applicant. I will announce each application, then the director will review with the council the minutes and testimony from the planning and zoning hearing, and those minutes will be made part of the record along with any exhibits introduced at the planning and zoning hearing and any recommendation made by the commission. The applicant will be called on to present and explain their application and present reasons supporting the application. Council may question the applicant and their witnesses. After the applicant has presented their application, council will provide an opportunity for anyone else who favors the application to speak. After that, any persons who are present and oppose or question the application will be allowed to state the reasons for their opposition or questions. After that, there will be no rebuttal by the applicant, and the hearing will be closed unless council decides to leave the record open for a specific purpose and time period. Further, the applicant will not be allowed to question persons who speak in opposition, and persons who speak in opposition will not be allowed to question the applicant or their witnesses. If you intend to speak this evening, you are required to come to the front and stand at the speaker stand to state your name and home address before you make a statement. If you represent or speak for a group or organization, please identify who you represent. When you make your statement, please be concise. Do not repeat yourself. If you have a written statement, hand it to me and it will be made part of the record. If there is more than one witness for the applicant or more than one person in opposition, please do not repeat points that a prior speaker has already stated. Everyone in attendance should conduct themselves in an orderly fashion. No applause or other disruptive behavior is permitted. If you have a cell phone, pager, beep, or other telephonic device with you, we ask that you take the time now to switch it off or turn it to silent service. At the conclusion of the hearing on each application, council may either approve it, deny it, or defer it to a later date. If the Planning and Zoning Commission deferred action, council will do likewise. Now, to summarize that a little bit further, there are a lot of people here with an interest in these applications this evening, so I want to go in a little more detail about some of the rules that I just summarized. And that summary comes from the rules of how county council conducts itself that were adopted originally in 1996. First, in addition to the prohibition against disruptive behavior that I mentioned, there's always a tendency to talk or whisper among members of the audience during the various presentations. Please try to refrain from doing this to the extent you can with an audience as large as this. We found that it makes things difficult for us to hear up here and for others in the audience to hear as well. The council, according to its rules, can limit testimony that is irrelevant or unduly repetitive. That applies not only to the supporters and opponents, but the applicant as well. If you have a written statement, please present that to either me or Mr. Lank, and it will be made part of the record. For the benefit of everyone here tonight, it makes no difference legally whether the information is spoken or written. Both forms of evidence carry the same weight and are part of the record and will be considered by county council as it makes its decision. Finally, with regard to the council's ability to limit repetitive testimony under its rules, relevant testimony is given the same legal weight, whether it's given once or it is given 10 times. The council is not going to be in a position to need to hear the same issue for or against the application over and over. On the other hand, the council is very interested in all the relevant evidence or written or verbal testimony that everyone or anyone wishes to present. So on behalf of the county council, thanks for listening to this explanation of the process.
I do have a note from our county attorney. Due to a personal potential conflict of interest I've asked county assistant attorney Vince Robertson to conduct the hearing tonight. My conflict is not due to a professional conflict. I do not have, nor do I represent any of the parties involved in tonight's hearing. I am, however, a member of a LLC that owns real estate in Maryland. One of the applicants tonight is also a member of the LLC, even though I have never discussed this project with the applicant and normally only see the applicant once a year at our annual meeting. I believe that it is in the interest of full disclosure and avoiding even the appearance of impropriety that it is best that I recuse myself, and I ask Mr. Robinson to handle this matter, Everett Moore. That would be primarily focused on the second application, but to allow for more efficient running of the meeting, he has asked Mr. Robinson to handle all of tonight's proceedings. I will now turn the meeting over to Mr. Lank for our first application.
The first public hearing this evening is change of zone number 1689, the application of O.A. Newton & Son Company and Purdue Agribusiness Incorporated. An application to amend the comprehensive zoning map from an AR1 agriculture residential district to an LI2 light industrial district for a certain parcel of land lying and being in Northwest 400, Sussex County, land lying east of Road 583, also known as Adams Road, 1/2 mile southeast of Road 584, also known as Newton Road, and to be located on 2.702 acres, more or less. Is anyone here on behalf of the applicant?
Corporate breakdown. It's too.
Want to defer to later?
We will defer till later. Rob?
We'll announce it again at the end of the.
You would have expected Mr. Ryder.
Mr. Tonight. Ryder, well, was sure he would be here.
He's familiar with the process.
Okay. We will defer that application until the end of the evening. In the meantime, if anybody knows Mr. Ryder, maybe give him a call. He's got plenty of time, I have a feeling, to get here. All right, Mr. Lang, please proceed.
The second application is change of zone number 1690. The application of LT Associates, LLC, to amend the comprehensive zoning map from an AR1 agriculture residential district to a CR1 commercial residential district for a certain parcel of land lying and being in Lewis and Rehoboth 100, Sussex County, for land lying at the southeast corner of Road 268 being King's Highway and Road 267 being Gills Neck Road, and to be located on 45.77 acres, more or less. Planning and Zoning Commission held a public hearing on this application on September 10th of 2009. For the Commission's public hearing, and also for this evening, the applicants provided us with a three-ring binder, a large exhibit booklet, which is a part of the record, and was received on August 31st of 2009 for the Commission and yesterday for the Council. So the council all have copies of the same booklet. The commission was also provided with copies of the report from the city of Lewis to the state planning coordination office with copies of a PowerPoint presentation. The council also has another series of reports and documents which I've incorporated from all the comments received up to date today, and that weren't a part of the booklet, and that includes comments from the Sussex Conservation District, the Sussex County Engineering Department, Utility Planning Division, a letter of support, and 121 letters and emails in opposition. And they are also a part of the record, and all the council has copies of those in front of them. During the commission's public hearing, they were provided with the same letter in support and 42 letters in opposition as of the meeting on the 10th. The applicant was present, or the applicants were present with Dennis Rader, attorney with Wilson, Halbrook and Byard, Frank Key of Frank Key Communities, LLC, Jack W. Holland, architect, Tucker Mooreshead of Earth Data Incorporated, James Willie, professional engineer with George Miles and Burl, Leif Erickson, soil scientist and president of Atlantic Resource Management Incorporated, Thomas W. Martin, senior associate of Economics Research Associates, and Derek Kennedy, traffic consultant with Orth Rogers and Associates, who all participated in the public hearing. And in my report, there are several pages of their comments. By a show of hands in the audience, just for curiosity purposes, to know who was here on behalf and in opposition, we had 17 parties present in support. We had 114 parties present in opposition. We had one, David Horsey spoke in support and referenced the need for jobs. Terry Raspberry, executive director of YMCA of Delaware, gave testimony in support. There was also Karen Mason, 17-year resident of the area, also stated that she was in support. Jim Ford, mayor of the city of Lewis, was present with Ken Meacham, General Manager of the City of Lewis Public Board of Public Works, and Bruce Galloway of Fox Services, a consultant for the city, and gave testimony.
I thought Mr. Raspberry said he was neither in support or opposing of the Y.
No, the gentleman for the Y was, well, he was, I'm sorry, he was neutral, but he was.
That's what I thought he
said.
Yeah,
he was interested in the property.
Okay, thank you.
In opposition, John A. Sergevic Jr., attorney with Sergevic and Carmine Professional Association, was president on behalf of Managing Growth Around Lewis Incorporated and the Citizens Coalition Incorporated, with Mike Lenhart, professional engineer of Lenhart Traffic Consulting Incorporated, William Moyer of Moyer Environmental Consulting, Charles Hewitt, managing director of RCLCO Real Estate Advisors, Mike Tyler, president of the Citizens Coalition Incorporated, Gail Van Gilder, chairperson of the Lewis Scenic Byways Committee, and John Mateko, principal of John Mateko Architects, LLC, all gave testimony in opposition as a group. Again, several pages of my report relate to that. The Honorable Gary Simpson, state senator, was also present and gave testimony. There were 9 parties of the 114 in opposition that gave testimony, and there was a summation of their comments placed in the record. There was a petition submitted from Nadine Wicks, which contained 1,200 signatures in opposition. There were also letters submitted at the last minute, just handed in. One was from Sandra Pelaine of Lewis, resident business owner. And there were responses to the commission's questions and some of the opposition's questions provided by the representatives of the applicant at the conclusion. At the conclusion of the public hearing, the commission did defer action for further consideration. Since the public hearing on September 9th, I did make reference to the number of letters I've received. That is a part of the record. This evening, just before the start of the public hearings, I received some additional correspondence. I have a memo for the record from David Ennis, resident of Lewis. It's about a quarter inch thick, and all the council persons have copies. That is a part of the record. I received a new booklet. This is the old booklet. Have a new booklet from Sergevic and Ellis on behalf of the opposition. The council all has copies of that also. I was also handed just before, a couple minutes before 6, a letter from the Lewis Historic Society. Since I have the only copy, I will read it to the record. The Board of Trustees of Lewis Historic Society writes to you to express its concerns regarding the proposed rezoning of lands on Kings Highway and Gills Neck Road near Lewis. As you may know, Lewis was designated one of the America's Dozen Distinctive Destinations by the National Trust for Historic Preservation in 2006, partly because the town has taken measures to preserve the historic character of Lewis, its neighborhoods, and landmarks. Lewis was also recognized as a Preserve America community by First Lady Laura Bush in 2006. Earlier this year, DelDOT recognized Gills Neck Road and Kings Highway as part of the Lewis Scenic and Historic Byway, making this area the first so designated in Sussex County. Lewis has seen more than 375 years of recorded history, thousands of years of Native American habitation, and enjoys a natural setting reveled in few places in this country. The historic core of Lewis has been regarded by national, state, and local governments as an important cultural area that draws visitors and income to our town, county, and state through its open spaces that stress Sussex's agricultural strength, its waterfront that recalls its maritime heritage, and an architecture that reflects the strength of its people. Lewis is an authentic place in an increasing homogeneous world. It is a unique national treasure located here in Sussex County. The preservation of Lewis, Delaware's oldest town, and rural Sussex cannot be taken lightly. The Society's Board of Trustees hopes you and your fellow members of County Council will give this matter the deep consideration it deserves and reject the proposed zoning change. And that was signed by F. Rogers Jones, President, Board of Trustees. And I also received, just prior to the meeting, a handwritten note. My name is Alvin Messick, states where he lives. He and his wife are for this project. This work that this project will make for the area is needed. And that was signed by Alvin and Crystal Messick. And ladies and gentlemen, that's all I have unless you have questions.
Any questions for Mr. Lang?
Did he give an address?
Oh, did he give an address? Yeah. Lowe's Road, Lewis.
Thank you.
Or excuse me, Milford.
Milford?
Millsboro.
Millsboro.
And also for the benefit of council, since I did Xerox copy a lot of the information that was provided, there were two reports turned in at the last meeting from the city of Lewis, and I do have colored copies that are a little easier to read. So if you can pass those down, there's one for each of you. And I still have one for the record. And this is the second one.
Thank you.
And that's all I have.
Thank you. I would ask both the applicant and the folks who are speaking from the public for restraint in providing duplicate information. I know many of you would like to be heard, and we respect your right. But it is going to be a long night, and if testimony has covered your thought, we would maybe ask you to try to refrain. We would like to ask at this time if Mr. Robinson's all right with it for a show of hands. Go ahead.
If we could have a show of hands, first of those that are present in favor of this application. Yeah, if you would check. And that would include, I think there's speakers set up outside, and for those people that can hear downstairs or in the foyer, there is somebody that's going to go check out there and make a count as well. So please keep your hands up until you're counted.
We need to do counting.
And we'll state it at the commission level. Just remember, he's an attorney. He's not a mathematician.
Thanks, Mr. Lank. I appreciate that. Lawrence, can you see? Is there anybody back in the corner? I see, I think, five. Yeah, no, I see that.
4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14.
That's how it's going, it doesn't have to be exact, just a rough number,
20.
Guys.
Yeah, I had,
but some of them dropped their hands.
I had 22.
Okay, take your number.
You had 22?
Yeah.
And Dave might come in with some more.
Yeah.
You had 20, you had 22. You going to ask the other?
I'm just going to wait for Dave to come in with that other number.
Maybe Dave's not coming back.
All right. Well,
he saw the size of the crowd and decided.
Zero.
Zero, okay. Thank you. Those folks that are in opposition to the application this evening, if we could have a show of hands on that.
Opposition wins, meeting adjourned. And we do ask that there's no public display of approval of the chair's frivolous comments.
Say something about the technical stuff. Oh, yes, Lord.
Lead into it. Yeah, regardless, I was going to give you the floor.
Okay. We'll see if they have any complaint about it, any concern about it.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see if they have any concern about
good.
It.
That's good.
You got your computer right, Lawrence?
Here.
I feel like I'm at a game show.
What'd you get, Vince?
Downstairs
opposed. I had 101.
I had 103.
And 8 downstairs opposed.
Okay.
Make it 102, that'd be 110 total.
Yeah, 110.
Plus or minus.
Okay. Plus the 8.
Thank you, Vince.
Yep. You're welcome. Also, I'd like to turn the floor over to Mr. Cole, who had a technical question, I believe.
And you can speak to it if you want, Dennis and Lawrence.
this is a conceptual, it's a change of zone, right?
Yes, it is.
Right, so a lot of what we're hearing is conceptual, correct?
That's correct.
My request would be is not to get into maybe some of your people, your experts, not to get too bogged us down too much with like the stormwater and some of this engineering, because again, it being that it's conceptual, it's important, I know, but maybe they just touch on it, like they're going to use green technology, but then don't explain what green technology is, or they're going to do something to, you know, with nutrient management, but, you know, don't tell us all the fine details, because that will just kill us and overwhelm us with too much stuff that we don't need to hear. Now, if you have any problem with that, Dennis, but because I know being this is conceptual, a lot of that could change after tonight. So touch on it, but just don't dwell on it. That's my request. I think the last time we had this, there was a lot of information that just went on and on and on. So if you have any problem with that, please let me know now. And
I do have a problem with it, Mr. Cole, because part of the problem is that a large part of the opposition, which we have heard several weeks ago, we'll get into site plan specific information based upon plus comments or other items that were raised. I acknowledge that you don't want us to be duplicative, and we're going to try to avoid that. We're also going to try to be, avoid some of the things that you would like us to avoid in terms of hyper-technical detail. But if someone comes in and says the well at Lewis is going to be contaminated by reason of stormwater runoff at this particular project, I've got to put on the record something that says that it won't. And I acknowledge your concern. I appreciate why you've expressed it.
Even with the opposition, it goes both ways. I don't want to hear a lot of this stuff because, again, it's all conceptual. What we're really concerned about is the key things of traffic, the is it an appropriate spot for a CR zone and all that stuff.
And I know one more comment, and that simply is that because we have the burden of going first, we don't have the opportunity of a rebuttal. We've got to be able to get on record what we think is appropriate in terms of anticipated opposition.
Do what you can.
I'll do what I can to make it short, George, because I know you want to go see the Phillies play.
No. I was hoping to get over by 7 because my son's playing soccer.
So I would go to 7 Thursday, correct?
I would.
Another game Thursday. Yes,
while we're still relaxed, Ms. Deaver, it's good to see you again. We do this every, three nights?
It's a great pleasure, Mr. Schrader.
Mr. Schrader.
There are still some seats available.
I would anticipate, for your information and for the public's information, that I hope to have about a 10-minute break after the applicant's presentation, which I understand could be 90 minutes to 2 hours long.
I was thinking more like 4 hours, but I'll see if I can cut that back for you.
And I see Mr. Phillips has his ibuprofen and his egg timer. Turn that egg timer. Let's go.
With all due respect to all of the members of the council, we understand that this is a long process. The last presentation was 6.5 hours. There were a lot of people that had to leave for a number of reasons, including people who are opponents of this application who would have liked to have heard all that there was to be said. And we're going to try to abbreviate it, but without taking the case to bare bones. So we'll see what we can do for you, right? For the benefit of the record, my name is Dennis Schrader. I am representing the applicant, LT Associates. The members of the applicant group are generally speaking sitting in the dark in the far corner back there, and I have with me a number of experts who will testify. They include Frank Key, Jim Willey, an engineer from George Miles and Bureau. I have Bob Rogers from Orth Rogers, the traffic speaker experts. He has with him Mr. Kennedy, Derek Kennedy, who you've seen before. We have Mr. Hollins, Mr. Martin, Mr. Morshead, and Leif Erickson, who we refer to as the pinch hitter on certain soils issues. Lawrence has described for you this project, and I would suspect that with the exception of those of you who are either new council members or who did not participate in the proceedings a year or so ago, everybody in this room knows where this particular project site is. It is certainly as well-publicized a project application as has been seen by the county council in a great many years. I represent the applicant, which is LT Associates. The land is owned by J.G. Townsend and Company. We have participated in a lengthy process to get here, and this application is back because it was previously withdrawn as a result of the public comments concerning the size of the project and the size of the proposed shopping center. In response to the opposition comments, it has been scaled down, was represented to plus. As a result of the plus comments, it was cut down again by another 67,000 square feet. So we're here, although we may not be considered the good guys by many of the people behind us, we have heard some of the comments that have been made, and we have tried to react to them. This project is located across Kings Highway from the Cape and Lopen High School. It's located at the corner of Gills Neck Road, and it contains 45.77 acres, more or less. There is an additional tract of land that was withdrawn that is not a part of this application, that was a part of the old application that contained 22 acres, and you will hear some considerable discussion as the evening goes on about the proposed use of that 22 acres. Currently, this site is located in an AR1 agricultural single-family residential district. It is used for the farming operations of J.G. Townsend Jr. Company. As we will begin to explain to you as the evening progresses, this property has been characterized as an orphaned farm in that it is the last remaining farm of this size in this particular area, and it is surrounded by development, either a residential, commercial, the high school, the city of Lewis, or what have you, but it will, as I have characterized it in the past, it would be naive to assume that this property will remain in farming forever. We are proposing a CR1 commercial residential district with a large-scale use, which is permitted by your ordinance along a major arterial roadway. And we'll come back and discuss that major arterial roadway issue in just a minute. The site itself contains 300,000 square feet of proposed commercial use. It is not an enclosed mall. It is a mall that will have many different structures on it. So any comparisons to Christiana or what have you that are enclosed malls are inappropriate because we do not have that type of enclosure. This site is located in an environmentally sensitive developing area. Under your comprehensive land use plan as it was adopted in 2008, under the state strategies for planning and spending, this is in a level 2, which is a suburban or rapidly growing area with public water and wastewater, and also contains a level 3 area, which is adjacent to or intermingled with fast-growing areas under the state strategies map. There are public highways involved in this particular project, and that would be Kings Highway, Gills Road, and other public roads around there. There are also private roads that will be on site that will be a part of the proposed concept of this plan. Sanitary waste disposal will be provided by the Sussex County Engineering Department as a part of the West Rehoboth expansion of the Dewey Beach Sanitary Sewer District. Water supply will be provided by Tidewater Utilities. There are no delineated wetlands, either state or federal, on site, and no buffers will be required under any of the plus comments because any of this site is more than 500 feet from any known wetlands. We have submitted to you a book that you should be familiar with in terms of my presentation style. It does contain the application, the plus comments, the plus rebuttal that we gave, plus his response to us, and a number of technical reports, which if you take the time to read, and I admit that you can't do this on the fly, if you read this, you're going to have to take a couple nights, and you're going to have to take something to stay awake, because it is tedious, it is technical, and it is sometimes hard to digest, even for people like on my team that do this for a living. But we provide all of this to you in order for you to have a good record upon which to understand what is going on. Frank will get up in a few minutes and go through this book in a summary version in order to give you, shall I say, the executive view of the material that's contained in here. As Mr. Cole has pointed out, and I will reiterate for Mr. Cole's benefit, this is not a site plan review. I know there are a number of people who are critical of the zoning process because they would like to see all these applications have site plan review, much as you get in a conditional use, but that's not what this does. if we were in a site plan review scenario and we were looking at the concerns that will be raised by the opposition to this application, we would be here presenting to you specific site-engineered solutions. We're not here to do that, and we can't do that tonight because a lot of what you will hear is generalized comments about this project, both from us and from the opposition, and we will do the best we can to give you things to think about. The question posed before the council this evening is whether or not the zoning designation for this particular tract of land two sets of these gentlemen, we're going to, and Ms. Deaver, we're going to turn one so it faces the audience and one for you. This also is in the book. But this is the site. It's the Cape and Open High School, Hills Highway, Hills Neck Road, Clay Road, Route 1. You're going to hear a lot about all of this. But the question before you tonight and for your decision, when you choose to make that decision, is whether or not on the official zoning map of Sussex County, will the designation for this 45.77-acre tract of land be amended to change its designation from AR1 agricultural to CR1 commercial residential district? That's the issue. The zoning application in this hearing, as I have pointed out, require the presentation of facts supported by substantial evidence. For that reason, I'm going to ask that this book, which is a part of the record of planning and zoning, and all that we have to say and show you tonight, be made a part of this record. The material that we give you is material that is relevant and probative of those things that you need to have in order to make a positive disposition of this application. There are a lot of things that have been read, said, and heard about this project that are simply not true. They appear in the newspaper. They will appear on Channel 16 tonight. If we get home in time to see Channel 16, I don't know that we will. Maybe tomorrow morning at 7 o'clock if we can get up. But keep in mind that 15% of this site is devoted to structure, not 100%. If this project is approved, it's not going to appear in the blink of an eye or the snap of a finger. It will be phased and brought in the normal course of business. There are 8 buildings on this site, not just one proposed enclosed structure. There's an issue that's been raised about whether or not there are Native American grave sites on this property. There are not. They were on another project site. They were identified and dealt with in that process. We have signs that say that Lewis is not for sale. This property is owned by the J.G. Townsend Company. They've owned it for the fourth generation. They've owned it since the 30s. That's just not the issue here. And you're also going to hear about a lot of concerns about things that people think that may be wrong about this site and why you should deny it. Those concerns don't necessarily translate into negative results on this application. What they may result in is engineering solutions being brought forth that will solve some of those problems, and we will get into those as we get through the evening. Now, a couple things that I'd like to get into with you all are, first, we had from Mr. Sergovic his booklet that addresses the issues of the comprehensive plan and several legal issues. I have a legal memorandum here that is addressed to Mr. Phillips, and I know Mr. Phillips is skilled at those things that he does, but I'm also expecting that he will turn it over to Mr. Robertson. And I'll give Mr. Sergovic a copy. But these address the legal issues that were raised by Mr. Sergovic in his book and in the earlier presentation. And I also have a handful of copies here, I think totally 10, for Mr. Lank, and I will ask that they be brought also into the record. The items that were raised by Mr. Sergovic are fairly interesting, some of which are novel, some of which may or may not be accepted by you as the evening wears on or as they are analyzed by Mr. Robertson on your behalf. Some of these issues I think that you will probably ask for consultation with Mr. Robertson to give you his opinion on them, and I will let most of them go without reciting the content of this particular memo with the exception of one, and that is perhaps the most novel of Mr. Sergovic's arguments, and that is Route 9 is not Route 9. Huh. I never knew that. How did John get there? Well, John got there by taking 9 Business Route, and that is the route that runs along Savannah Road, and saying it leaves in a northeasterly direction from Route 1 and goes to the southwesterly boundary of the city of Lewis. Curiously enough, the Route 9 that we know and love, which is King's Highway, does the same thing. And I have provided to you, as an exhibit, 3 attachments. The first one is the 1985 general maintenance map for Sussex County, which will show you what this ordinance was based upon and the designation of King's Highway at the time. The ordinance was prepared in 1991. That is that U.S. Route 9, as designated with the cooperation of the United States Department of Transportation, ran from Carpenter's Corner to the Lewis Ferry along King's Highway. It is not Savannah Road. Savannah Road, at the time of the drafting of that ordinance, was known as Route 9BR. I have also attached a copy of the current map that shows that King's Highway is Route 9. And just for the fun of it, to take you back a little bit, because not all of us remember 1957 that well. In 1957, King's Highway did not run to the ferry, and you can see that on the 1957 maintenance map, which supports at least one of the positions I take, and that is that King's Highway was actually intended to be a bypass for the town of Lewis. It was not intended to direct traffic into the city of Lewis. I also would point out that DLDOT, in its wisdom, has entered into an MOU with my client for certain highway maintenance requirements. There are off-site improvements that will be made. I'm going to provide you with copies of those. And I'll give Mr. Sergeant one also. If we're wrong, so is Carol Ann Wicks, the Secretary of the Department of Transportation, because she seems to think it's U.S. Route 9. And so is your comp plan, which designates it as U.S. Route 9. Having said all of that, what is the significance of this? The significance is that when Mr. Lank and I drafted that ordinance in 1991, we intended it to be a major arterial roadway. And when the ordinance was written creating CR1, it recites to 99-5, the ordinance we wrote and which I have addressed. So taking that for what it's worth, we're on a major arterial roadway, and the CR1 classification is something that can take place at this particular site if you choose to do so. Mr. Sergovic also raised a number of issues about the comprehensive plan and its effect and its legal implications. I'm going to let you resolve that issue by reading what Mr. Sergovic has to say and reading what we have to say, and let you, with the advice of Mr. Robertson, come to your own conclusions about it and how the CR1 ordinance come together. I would point out, and I think this is significant, that under the review by the Office of State Planning Coordination, the PLUS review did not result in any objection to this particular project. By the PLUS review, DLDOT did not have an objection to this process and this particular application, and in fact, as I've pointed out, entered into that agreement for highway improvement requirements. Having said all of those things, I'd like to introduce now Mr. Key. Mr. Key is available and will discuss with you the description of the project and some of the conformity things that we are in the process of doing with this particular application. I would point out that we typically like to have the witnesses come up and have them be interrogated at the conclusion of all the presentation, because sometimes what one witness says will dovetail into something else. I do have one person who has to get out of here in a hurry, and we are going to have Mr. Mooreshead leave after his presentation, and I'll remind you that we're going to lose him, so that if you do have any questions of Mr. Mooreshead, you can get them in before he takes off. Mr. Key.
Thanks, Dennis. Good evening. I'm Frank Key with Frank Key Communities. Dennis covered a lot of territory that I'm going to skip over entirely. The issue, obviously, is a change of land use. In this circumstance, the livable Delaware policies, including state spending strategies, as well as the comprehensive plan, push development toward towns. That's just the way the plan is. Those are the things that are adopted. Those are the policies. You're all familiar with it. We happen to be in one of the seven growth areas enumerated in the plan, and it's a location where infrastructure exists to support development or where it has been or will be provided by the developer. Generally, this application is in conformance with the comprehensive plan. It is not, or a decision to rezone this to CR1 would not be arbitrary or capricious. The property is in a designated growth area, the environmentally sensitive developing area, with a designation of low to medium density, which allows CR1. It's located in investment levels 2 and 3 in state spending strategies. It's on King's Highway. It's a designated principal arterial roadway in the comprehensive plan, as well as a major arterial roadway under Section 99.5. Sewer and water service and other utilities are available to the site. They're available at the applicant's expense. The site is surrounded by either existing or previously approved commercial, single-family, and high-density multifamily residential development. It's going to be the hole in the donut as a farm. Difficult to farm if it's surrounded by development in one of the most urbanized areas in this area. There is a demand for over 350,000 square feet of commercial space, which you'll hear more from our market analyst as well as the oppositions. The health, safety, and welfare of the citizens of the county would be served in many ways. Reduction of nutrients in groundwater and surface water. The elimination or reduction in use of farm irrigation wells. Those two wells run about 30 million gallons a year when they're in operation. The entire town of Lewis uses about 4 million gallons a year. When those are reduced even a little bit, it will substantially affect the available water in the area. You'll hear more about that from Tucker Mooreshead, who is a licensed hydrogeologist. We have multimodal transportation choices built into the plan, both on the perimeter as well as through it. We have provided the road that DelDOT wanted specifically, which is the reason for the reduction from 387,000 square feet in the plus submission to 327,000 in the final submission. The plan provides shopping and entertainment venues closer to nearby residents, which should reduce and shorten vehicular trips. In terms of safety, the bottom line is the applicant will be spending or donating land, as the case may be, to the tune of about $8.5 million on traffic improvements. Those things are enumerated in the agreement that has been signed by Carol Ann Wicks with the developer. The bottom line is a whole series of intersection improvements, which is what really counts. Those would be at Clay Road, at the intersection of Route 1 and King's Highway, basically, late at Gills Neck Road and the intersection there at the high school. It's turn lanes, through lanes, fully signalized intersections. In fact, there will be a dedication of property that includes what they call the Jones Farm, which is across King's Highway and down Clay Road. In fact, the dedication will make it possible to make dualized King's Highway in the future. Further, because these traffic intersections are the intersections will be improved, you'll see that there will be an improvement of all vehicular movement. That includes emergency vehicular movement. In terms of the welfare of the county, there will be hundreds of both temporary and construction-related jobs, about $1.6 million in taxes per year every year without a draw on services. It will, in fact, the existence of this commercial will solidify shopping, too. At this point in time, there's about an 8.4% unemployment rate in this county. With these jobs, that will help. Won't fix it, but it'll help. In addition, the plan itself adds a 100-space parking lot for potential future shuttle use that'll benefit merchants in downtown Lewis and others that the shuttle might go to, and a 25-space parking lot for cyclists desiring to use the bike trail. Sewer and water service will also be provided to the site. Later, you're going to hear testimony from the opposition, primarily the Town of Lewis and associated organizations. One concept runs through all of that testimony, and that is that all of this material that's in this book, provided by professionals, as well as your own comp plan, simply doesn't mean what it says. That's what they're going to tell you. That goes from the comprehensive plan itself to the PLUS review letter to the letter of no objection from DelDOT, all the way to simply the material that's here. For example, Mr. Sergovic will tell you that Route 9 is not Route 9, just as Dennis suggested. He'll tell you that the comprehensive plan doesn't say what it says. It is in the environmentally sensitive developing area. It is in low to medium density. It does allow CR1. That's what it says. And much like contracts, you can interpret them all day, but they say what they say. You'll also hear from Mr. Sergovic's traffic expert. To begin with, his testimony at the Planning and Zoning Commission was based on 387,000 square feet. Clearly, he didn't read the application. It's 320,000 square feet. About half of Mr. Linhart's testimony is related to matters that aren't even traffic related. They're land use related. Apparently, Mr. Linhart is a traffic engineer, but not a land use expert. His presentation of DelDOT's traffic model is based on the assertion that because a new traffic impact study was not required by DelDOT, therefore, the traffic is really not significantly different. Thus, he shows us some version of DelDOT's original model that was based on 521,000 square feet of commercial. The fact is that this application reduces that traffic or increases traffic in the area by about 30%, but it decreases traffic from that original application by about 30% also. So the model is completely wrong. Mr. Rogers with Orth Rogers will get into that in more detail. You're going to hear that kids can't cross the road. This is an attractive nuisance, but our high school kids at Cape Henlopen can't cross the road. Personally, my kids could cross the road when they were 9 years old. I believe it's safe to assume that they can here, especially with fully signalized pedestrian-oriented traffic signals. I'm relatively sure that it'll be safer when these improvements are made than it is today. You're going to hear, there's a letter in the file, in fact, and you'll hear testimony, I'm sure, that Beebe Hospital is in opposition to this proposal. That's not the case. The fact is that Bill Lingo met with Jeff Freed at the hospital today. What they said is they're concerned about the traffic, which is exactly what their letter says. They're going to say that they can't be responsible for how that's reported in the newspaper. At the end of the day, what became apparent in this conversation was that Mr. Freed and his board were unfamiliar with the traffic improvements that are being proposed by this applicant. They knew nothing about it. As a consequence, if they're concerned about it, it's because if you read letters to the editor and you read the articles in the paper, you hear reported, and by Mr. Linhart, that there is a 1,000 to 1,500% change in traffic. That is flatly untrue. There's a 30% change in traffic. That's it, no more. I would be concerned as well if I thought there were a 1,000% change. Mm. They're going to tell you that all the agency letters don't mean what they say. They're going to, in fact, in the Planning Commission, Mr. Linhart suggested that the letter of no objection, in which DelDOT says specifically that they don't object to the application, and that the improvements, if carried forth, will actually result in an acceptable level of traffic movement. That's what they said. That's what they meant. As a matter of fact, you can see that that's what they meant, because ultimately they signed an agreement with LT Associates ensuring that those traffic improvements will take place. They clearly have no objection. You'll also hear testimony that this is a scenic byway, and therefore this can't exist. And apparently, according to this testimony, BELDOT somehow didn't know what they were doing when they agreed to these improvements. Well, the fact is that the very secretary that approved the designation of a scenic byway is also the very secretary that signed the agreement for the improvements with LT Associates. They know what they're doing. Mr. Linhart does another thing that's very dramatic. He'll show you a slide. It shows the new plan superimposed over the old plan. It shows a couple of driveways that appear to line up. Therefore, he says, we got you. We know what you're going to do. You're going to put commercial on the remaining 22 acres. Well, he proves two things with that. First, he's not a land planner. That's very clear because that's not how you do it. The second thing he proves is that he's not listening to testimony, because the testimony that preceded him was that the YMCA is going on that site. That is a fact, and we have a memo of understanding that you have for the record that demonstrates that very thing. Now, they have to go through the same approval process that we do to be there, but the fact is that that's the 22 acres that has been discussed. You'll also hear testimony from Mr. Bill Moyer. Again, nothing means what it says. Laws don't mean what they say. He claims in two sets of testimony, in effect, that irrefutable evidence suggests that we're going to harm the creek and the bay. He makes many assertions that are based on nothing. He just says that's the way it's going to be. He also presents a paper outlining what he calls the flaws in the county zoning process. As I understand it, Mr. Moyer's a biologist and a zoologist and perhaps a wetland scientist. He's not a land use planner, and he's also not a hydrogeologist. We have one here tonight that will tell you that, together with wetlands experts, that will tell you that though he says there may be cropped wetlands on this site, there are not. And though he tells you that we're going to harm the Lewis water wells, we are not. He makes the case that there are no design specifications, that none of the engineering aspects of this have been answered. Well, the fact is that this is a land use decision. He'll tell you that he spoke to Connie Holland, and Connie told him that, well, her objection is really not no objection. Well, the fact is that the state simply said in their final letter from PLUS, the state has no objection to this rezoning. She didn't mean anything else. That's what she said. That's what she meant. All of these engineering-related things, nutrients in surface water, nutrients in groundwater, all of those things, we can affirmatively state that we won't do those any harm in those areas. And the reason we can is because it's the law. There are sediment erosion control laws. There are stormwater management laws. There is the pollution control strategy, which, by the way, was promulgated by the very agency that he once worked for. That requires a reduction of nutrients to a minimum of 40%. If we take this farm offline and put this shopping center online, nutrients will be reduced, both to the groundwater as well as to the surface water, and that's by law. That's not imagination. You're going to hear a presentation, in fact, a very dynamic presentation from Mr. Hewlett with Charles Edward Lesser. He's a market analyst. He's very, very good. He's going to tell you four things when you listen to his testimony. He's going to tell you because a whole lot of land is already zoned commercial and some of it has plans approved, there's a 24-year oversupply of commercial in this area. The bottom line, though, is commercially zoned land does not equal an oversupply of uses. They have to be built to be an oversupply. He'll tell you that there are certain stores. One of every kind of store exists. We don't need any more stores. Well, except for people do need choices. There are multiple banks, multiple restaurants. There's a Lowe's and a Home Depot practically next to each other. That's because people like choices. Some people like Lowe's. Some people like Home Depot. That doesn't mean that simply, but it's like saying, I open my pantry and I find some vegetables in there. Therefore, I have food. Therefore, I don't need any other food. It's ridiculous on the face of it. He tells you that the vacancy rates are incredibly high, 30%, in fact, he says. Therefore, we don't need any more. Well, the fact is that the vacancy rate in this area is a very healthy 4%, unless you count all of the unbuilt vineyards project by Shell. If you count it, it's 30%. It's not built. The vacancy rate is 4%. He'll also tell you that if you build this thing, some lights might go out, meaning competition is bad. I think we're still in America. I think competition is still good. And the fact is that when you look at the vacancy rate argument and you look at this, some lights might go out, you got to wonder who he represents. Who is it that he's trying to prevent the demand from? You'll also hear testimony from Mr. Galloway, or at least in the Planning Commission, we heard testimony from Mr. Galloway. Basically, what he says is there's a terrible lack of intergovernmental coordination. But in saying so, he ignores the entire comp plan process, where governments coordinated, the municipalities coordinated with the county, it was a public process, the comprehensive plan was adopted legally. He also ignores the PLUS process, where everybody has a chance to input right there. All the governments can comment that want. We went through the PLUS process. In fact, we went through it twice. In the end, they don't object. The bottom line is, Lewis wants a green belt without having to annex the land or buy the land because they see no monetary benefit in doing so. The livable Delaware policies and the comp plan support this change of zone. Unfortunately, the comp plan didn't result in what they chose, which was green space. Thus, Mr. Galloway and the town, if you listen to the testimony, want you to cut out the portion of your comp plan that was legally adopted and essentially replace it with this future scan plan that they've developed that hasn't seen the first public hearing or the first legal adoption.
Mr. Keeter, you're going to go much longer because I'd like to hear the application. It seems that we're hearing, you're helping us with analysis of the opposition, and maybe we are capable of figuring this all out ourselves.
That could be, but by the same token, Mr. Cole, I've got to rebut because I can't do it
later.
Usually
we get this at the end or something. We'll hear the application first. But go ahead, if you could speed it up, please.
You're going to hear testimony also that we're going to be essentially building a shopping center over burial grounds. We're not. There's an archaeological report in here. It talks about how the site was investigated, how the actual archaeological sites were found in cooperation with SHPO, and in the end, they were preserved in place. And with that, I'll conclude my portion of this and turn it back over to Mr. Schrader.
Gentlemen, Ms. Deaver, I would like to have Mr. Control. Key tendered a copy of the YMCA Memorandum of Understanding. I ask that it be made part of the record. I'd also like to point out that at the prior hearing before the Planning and Zoning Commission, we submitted the curriculum vitae of all of the various experts that are going to appear tonight, indicating what their expertise is based upon their experience, education, and their skill areas. And I'm just going to ask that they be incorporated in this meeting also so that we don't have to go into trying to verify that each one is an expert.
Is that something new, the YMCA Memorandum of Understanding?
This Memorandum of Understanding had not been executed at the time that we had the planning and zoning hearings, Ms. Deaver.
And it says, I'm sorry, I hadn't had a chance to read it. What is
it?
You
can hardly read it, but it's,
mm-hmm, it's very hard to read.
Could you maybe just summarize it? Is it a done deal, or is this,
it is
this
a done deal
contingent
has been,
on this getting approved, or is there
it
any
is contingent
linkage?
Upon this getting approved. However, there is an agreement to do that, and there is Mr. Raspberry, who is from the Board of Directors or the Executive Director of the YMCA, who will appear later on to explain the YMCA's view of this particular application. The significance is that it takes the 22 acres out of play that was thought to be used for potential future expansion of the shopping center.
But that's not really part of this application, right?
Well, it becomes a significant concern, I think, because at least it was raised by Mr. Sergovic that we were somehow going to do a subterfuge where we would get a special exception and get it used as parking for the 45 acres. That's described in his book and rebutted in my letter. So the answer is, Ms. Deaver, it may be somewhat remote, but it is relevant to your thought processing on this application.
And so is it being sold, possibly sold to the Y or given? Or?
No, it's contingent on this approval.
It's all set out in
that. But even if this were not approved, they could still do that, couldn't they?
They could, or they could choose not to, depending upon what happens.
Okay.
I would like to call Mr. Morris at, please. And he is the hydrologist who will discuss for you the impact of this particular project on the hydrology and soils around the site. Mr. Morshead is also the one who needs to leave quickly. So when we get done with Mr. Morshead, if you have any questions, we'd like to have them presented at this time. Thank you.
Good evening. I'm Tucker Morshead. I'm a hydrogeologist and at Earth Data Incorporated, and my address is 131 Comet Drive in Centerville, Maryland. The city of Lewis operates a well field that's perpendicular to the King's Highway right across from this site. The wells in that well field pump water from the water table aquifer. It's a shallow sand that's connected to the surface. The water that's pumped from the well is derived from rainfall that falls locally. And there are two concerns. There's the quantity of water that may be affected by the proposed Townsend Village Center and the quality of that water. Because of these concerns and because it's a water table aquifer, DENREC in 2003 designated an area around the well field as a source area that deserves special attention and certainly special protection. The land use that's proposed is compatible with those protections. What is being proposed is not an industrial hazardous waste site. It's not a commercial site that's going to use hazardous waste. The land is presently a farmed field. It is irrigated and therefore has impacts presently on the quality and quantity of water. The irrigation of a field takes water that normally would have gone to recharge and move towards the city of Lewis's well field. It pumps it out of the ground and evaporates about 60% of it. Removing that well will therefore increase recharge. Recharge is defined as water that reaches the water table. It's not water that infiltrates in the ground. It's water that reaches the water table. As a farmed field, as a row crop, even with nutrient management plans, even with winter cover crops, a considerable amount of nitrogen moves past the root zone and enters the water table. Some of that water is moving towards the city of Lewis's well field, and in fact, the well that's closest to the King's Highway has been showing an increased nitrogen level. The concentration is increasing. What will the change in land use as proposed do for this well field? From a quantity of standpoint, the loss of the consumptive use of water will in itself increase the quantity of water that's available to the well field. And the elimination of a field that's presently row cropped will eliminate a major source of nitrogen. The Townsend Village Center proposes to collect rainwater that falls on the site, treat that rainwater, and then recharge it underground. Jim Willey will present testimony of a budget study that was done, and the amount of water that will recharge the aquifer as a result of this development will be greater than what presently recharges the local aquifer. Eventually, as a result of this land use change, the water quality in the town of Lewis Wellfield will improve. The nitrate concentrations will continue to increase for a little while, and then they will start to decrease. In summary, the proposed Townsend Village Center will actually have a positive effect, both in terms of quality and quantity, on the town of Lewis Wellfield. Now, I have to go in a minute, but if there are any questions, I'd be...
But your whole premise is that CR1 would be better than farming.
Yes.
Wasn't there any other use that this land could be put to?
You could plant trees. I mean, there are other... Obviously, there are other land uses.
Well, I'm assuming that farming is not going to continue. I don't think, you know...
In terms of the best thing you could do...
Is CR1?
No, it would be because you're increasing recharge with treated water.
If you do.
Mm-hmm. That is a very, very positive aspect.
It certainly would be. Mm-hmm. If it were required under CR1, I don't believe it is.
Well, I'm not sure whether it's required or not, but it's being proposed.
Yes, it's a very good idea.
Any other questions? Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Moore's headlight, Ms. Deaver, gentlemen, I have now opportunity to present to you Mr. Willie, who is an engineer with George Miles and Bure, who will talk about the environmental assessment and infrastructure considerations that go with this particular project.
Good evening. For the record, my name is James Willie, Jr., Delaware licensed PE. 13710, been consulting engineering for 24 and a half years, all of which has been spent between the Chesapeake Bay and the Atlantic Ocean. Just in case there are any questions about my particular area of expertise. Mr. Cole, you brought up a great point in the beginning, because one of the prime objections issued by the opposition is that the environmental assessment didn't include sufficient engineering design detail. And you've already clearly pointed out that that's not required. However, I feel a little bit of a personal responsibility to both myself and my firm to point out several things. One, GMB has always been on the forefront of stormwater management, green technology, and environment. If for no other reason, we won the 2007 Governor's Conservation Award for Excellence for Urban Conservation Activities in Sussex County. That award, we were nominated by the Conservation District. We have employees that currently sit on the Technical Subcommittee and the Urban Consideration Subcommittee on the DENREC Regulatory Advisory Committee. We just sent out a quarterly mailing, Safeguarding Our Environment, Sustainable Site Design and Green Development, listing 10 projects on the front that include green technology and best management practices. There was a question, is the water balance any good? There's a water balance in your data book. Well, we've already had water balance calculations approved for the Providence Creek Academy north of Smyrna, Delaware, and the Milford Elementary School project. So we've been there, we've done that. Infiltration, does infiltration work? We have infiltration systems at the Epworth United Methodist Church, Providence Creek Academy, Seaford Police Department expansion, and the Seaside Point parking lot expansion. We also have infiltration systems designed but not installed at Milford Elementary School, Shoreview Woods, and several in Eastern Shore, Maryland, and the Eastern Shore, Virginia. There was a question raised regarding StormTech. It's a stormwater management treatment. Basically, what it does, when the water comes off the parking lot, before it's infiltrated, it treats, for quality, the stormwater. It treats in accordance with DENREC regulations. We have to. Mr. Moyer asked, who's protecting the public in issues of stormwater and environmental assessment? Well, the answer to that's simple. It's Frank Piorco. It's Randy Greer. It's Elaine Watson at DENREC. It's Jessica. It's Jim Elliott, Sussex Conservation District. We don't have any choice in these matters. These regs cover these things. And I think I've made it pretty clear that George Miles and Bureau knows how to meet these regs successfully. We've done it, and we've done it in an award-winning fashion. We have storm tech projects in White Creek Landing, and there's one designed but not yet installed at Heritage Creek outside Milton. With regard to groundwater recharge, your newly passed ordinance on groundwater protection says that roof drainage is fairly clean, should go directly to bioretention facilities. That's what we've proposed. That's what we've testified. That's in this data book. And I've got successful design bioretention facilities at Project in Ocean Pines, which is less than a couple miles south of the Delaware border. We've got one at Sunset Island in Ocean City, Maryland, which distributes water into their inland bays, which are protected by critical areas, very similar to what we have in Delaware. So what I just want to make the point is, for all of the conversation about PLUS comments being addressed inadequately and the environmental assessment not containing the appropriate detail, I have to disagree with that 100%. PLUS comments, preliminary land use service, it's a service to both the applicant and to the governing agencies. And when comments, for instance, State Fire Marshal comments, they're the same on every project. They say follow the regs. Well, we know that we won't get a major site plan approved by the Fire Marshal Office unless we follow the regs. So the correct response to that is we are aware of the regs and we will follow them. The side corollary is we have no choice. We have to follow them. Okay. Briefly, there is a preliminary site plan in the data book. Tab number one, preliminary site plan for rezoning includes 300 square feet of commercial, 20,000 square feet. It illustrates proper amount of parking. It illustrates DLDOT recommended entrance improvements. It represents vehicular and pedestrian connectivity to the governor's development. It illustrates 100 spaces for potential future shuttle parking to downtown Lewis. 25 spaces for users of the existing and improved bike path and multimodal path. And it shows stormwater management areas. And one of the comments that I wish to address directly at this point, you will hear the opposition say that once this rezoning is made, how much commercial can we fit on this site? Your site plan shows 320,000, but you're not limited to that. And I can tell you, as an engineer with a technical staff that fights these battles every day, that unless you go with underground parking or parking garages or some sort of extravagant measures, that you've about limited out what you're going to see. If you were to look at this site plan, even though it's not a site plan issue, you'll see a lot of area reserved for bioretention. You'll see a lot of area consumed with parking. You'll see a lot of area in landscape islands and boulevard and medians. Those things are required by the code. So I can tell you that unless somebody goes totally out of what's been done in this area before, what you see is what you're going to get. I believe Mr. Schrader testified at the planning and zoning hearing that we wouldn't even try to pull a bait and switch. And I'm saying it goes beyond a bait and switch. That's what fits. All right. With regard to development and environmentally sensitive developing area, we are required, for the record, to comply with zoning code section 115-194.3. It's enumerated in the code items A through L. One of the complaints that was registered by the opposition is that the environmental assessment provided in this data book is incomplete because it incorporates by reference the data in the data book. Now, Mr. Cole, I know you remember going way back at least 9 or 10 years, large projects have been presented in these data books for at least that long. Small projects have been presented in these data books ever since, at a minimum, since Mr. Johnson came on the Planning and Zoning Committee. This book was submitted as a unit. The environmental assessment was part of this book. It was intended to be part of this book. The only place you can find the environmental assessment is in this book. So when the other tabs and other information in this book is referencing this environmental assessment, it's there. It's all there. It was submitted as one piece. First item is drainage design and stormwater management. tab 5, in fact, is entitled Environmental Assessment in your data book. Our stormwater management will have to meet all regulatory design. I've given you a list of examples of cases where we've met it for infiltration, for bioretention, for all the green technologies that are acceptable. There's a water balance in tab 5. It goes through in a month-by-month analysis, existing condition versus proposed condition, and the conclusion is that if we infiltrate 13 acres of this site, we'll recharge existing, up to existing levels. We could recharge more than that. There's 45 acres that could be recharged, but if 13 acres are recharged, the water balance works. That's science. That's the spreadsheet. That's the same spreadsheet that we used at Providence Creek Academy and was approved. That's the same spreadsheet that was approved for Milford Elementary School. I already mentioned previously the perimeter to Village Center will contain biofiltration swales to treat rooftop runoff, exactly as recommended by your new water source protection ordinance. Paved areas will have StormTech or similar water quality treatment chambers, followed by underground infiltration practices. The StormTech even has the first chamber set up so it can be maintained, protects the rest of the chambers. Mr. Moyer testifies that these systems need maintenance. And Mr. Moyer is correct. These systems do need maintenance. But there's a lot of things in our modern day world that need maintenance. Your car needs maintenance. My lawn needs maintenance. Maintenance is necessary, but it's not necessarily an evil. On-site soil investigations. This is key. How do I know that we can do infiltration on the site? Because Mr. Leif Erickson of Atlantic Resource Management went out on this site and did 17 soil borings. He did not find one bit of hydric soil. What he did find was a seasonal high groundwater table between 115 and 148 inches below grade. That's 10 feet. What he also found was on the 45.77 acres that we're talking about, there are no farmed wetlands. There are no wetlands, period. On page 3 of his report, last paragraph, there are no wetlands on the site. Regardless of whether there's a JD or not, the county requires certified wetland scientists, signature on a final site plan, signature on a final subdivision plat. Mr. Moyer says it would be nice to have a JD, and I agree. If we were disturbing wetlands and if we were filing for a wetland disturbance permit, we'd be required to have a JD. These wetlands have already been placed in a conservation easement where we're 500 feet away from them, and there are none. What we're talking about tonight, there are no wetlands on this 45 acres. All right. One of the things that we have changed and we've made a commitment to do in regard to a plus comment. Our site impervious was about 60%. We had a 59 plus said 61. I'm saying close enough. The water source protection says 60%. Once you get over 60%, you got to do other things. We agreed that we'll reduce imperviousness on this site to 50%. We'll utilize porous pavement, porous concrete, or other forms of pervious paving materials for the outlying parking areas. We'll do it.
Mr. Robertson, that's not something we're deciding at this point, is there? The reduction of the imperviousness.
Not specifically because it's site plan. However, because it's in the environmentally sensitive development district overlay zone, mm-hmm. there is an environmental assessment that's required.
Right.
But to the extent that this is getting awfully site plan specific, let's keep it.
I'll speed it up.
Forward. Yeah.
We've talked about stormwater management. All stormwater management systems must safely convey the outfall to the receiving water. Mr. Moyer testified that uncontrolled runoff could damage the marsh edge, could cause problems with Pothook Creek. In the environmental assessment, we note that we're going to use low gradient swales, spread the water out to sheet flow condition. We're not going to undercut the marsh edges. We're not allowed. It's not going to happen. And we know there's technology available. All right, enough on stormwater. B is public water supply. I can make that very brief. We're in a tidewater system. There's a 12-inch line on site. There's plenty of water. Public wastewater collection, treatment, and disposal. We're in an existing district. There's existing force main on the site. LT Associates has already expended $2.8 million to install county-requested headworks improvements and wastewater transmission infrastructure, including 15 to 24-inch force mains underneath Pothook Creek, discharging at the Wolf Neck wastewater plant. It's there. It's available. There's no impact on the groundwater or surface water due to on-site septic. We have public wastewater. Mr. Lenhart said that the traffic section in this environmental assessment is incomplete. Well, the traffic assessment references the TIS, the memorandum of understanding, and which has now resulted in the signed contract with LDOT. So LDOT's happy that we've addressed traffic. Threatened and endangered species. As noted in the plus comments, nearby site investigations only revealed the presence of rare species in downstream sections of the wooded buffer along Pothook Creek and either further downstream. In accordance with the recommendations, the entire Pothook Creek wooded and wetland buffer is already preserved. In fact, the plus comments even hand out a kudos for that area being placed in the conservation easement already. The width of the buffer along the southern portion of the towns and lands that we're talking about ranges from 200 to 300 feet in width, which is greater than the recommended minimum buffer of 100 feet. Preservation of non-tidal wetlands. There are no non-tidal wetlands. Provisions for open space. We've got a village green, 0.35 acres in the village and green cluster of shops. It's very similar to what you'll see at Bear Trap Dunes for those that have been to that site. The village green can serve as an active open space and a social gathering area. There are landscape buffers and biofiltration areas along the perimeter of the site. Parking islands will be landscaped. Street trees are provided. The total landscape area, green space, biofiltration area within the village center is 9.13 acres. It's not 45 acres of sea of asphalt. There's 9 acres of green space. Provisions for public and private infrastructure, as mentioned. Public infrastructure includes public water, public sewer, operated by the Sussex County Engineering Department, and the public wire utilities, telephone, electric, cable, television, et cetera. Off-site improvements to Kings Highway and Gills Neck Road will be operated and maintained by DLDOT. These improvements have been signed off by the governor, Carol Ann Wicks, not the governor yet. She's Secretary of Transportation. The interior street and parking drives will be private infrastructure. The village center property manager will be responsible for operation and maintenance of the on-site streets, parking bays, curbs, sidewalks, landscaping. Just as typical, any shopping center has an operation and maintenance agreement. The one at Bayside is about 27 pages long. I happen to know a little bit about it. I helped work on it. It spells out who pays what. You got certain linear footage of store frontage, you pay a certain amount. You have a certain square footage of store frontage, you pay a certain amount toward the operation and maintenance. Economic, recreational, and other benefits. In my environmental assessment, I defer the economic benefits to the issues as addressed in detail by Mr. Tom Martins of ERA. I will point out that there are additional recreational opportunities. This plan includes the continuation of the existing multi-use path from Gills Neck Road out to and along Kings Highway. The path will connect from the village center through the developments of Governor, Senators, and Hawkeye, all the way to the Denrec Rails to Trails facility, which then turns and runs southerly all the way to Holland Glade. Item J is historic and cultural resources. I believe Mr. Key has already addressed those, as has Mr. Schrader. Mr. Key presented in his testimony and included in the entire tab number 2 of this public data book how we believe this plan conforms with the Sussex County Comprehensive Plan. Mitigation of detrimental impacts. Well, we've reduced a lot of detrimental impacts. There are no wetland disturbances. There are no wooded land disturbances. There's no critical habitat disturbances. We're going to recharge at least as much, if not more, water. We're going to treat the water before we infiltrate it. And we're going to take the fairly clean water off the roof, and we're going to put it in biofiltration. It's all green technology. It's all best management practice. And it's all what we do. I'm done. If you have any questions, be glad to answer.
Any questions?
Mm-mm.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Willie. Gentlemen, and Ms. Stever, I'd like to call Mr. Tom Martins, who is will give an economic analysis of this particular application.
Good evening. My name is Tom Martins with ERA, AECOM, actually now formerly known as Economics Research Associates. We completed both the market analysis and the fiscal and economic impact analysis for this project, which I believe you probably all have. And you also have the previous testimony. So I'll just want to clarify that our supportable square footage is not based solely on just new households. It will serve existing households who are here today. It's a community shopping center with a basically a primary trade area of roughly 5 or 6 miles. It's not a perfect circle. It's based on the road network, the ease of getting to this location. There would, however, be a secondary trade area that would extend beyond that to pull people in who would potentially otherwise be going to Dover or Salisbury. And mainly it's to help keep dollars in this location. People do still drive to Dover and Salisbury, even though we have a number of shopping centers already. But there is not everything at this location. For instance, there is no Target. If there was a Target, that would create a very dynamic center, and that would draw people. That would be supportable. There may be competition with other proposed centers. This is true. But again, our analysis is based on a 10-year time frame. So this shopping center or any of the competing shopping centers that are out there, none of these are going to happen overnight. These are all things that are going to be coming in over time as demand to support them increases. Let's see. So that's it. Any questions, I guess.
So basing that on a large shopping center concept, you're basing that information on that?
Really, it's a community shopping center. I mean, it could potentially be classified at the very, very bottom limit of what you'd call a regional, but it's also at the larger end of what you could call a community center at about 300 or so square feet, 1,000 square feet. Mm-hmm. You may hear referred to as a regional center, but generally a regional center is going to be something with two anchors and about 500,000 to 1 million square feet, and this is far short of that. It's really more a community shopping center.
Would a Sam's or Walmart be appropriate? Could that be put here, Mr. Robertson, in this zoning?
Sure. I can't answer that. I mean, you know, it has to go through the site plan review and, you know, the issue of whether it's a large-scale use, and that's down the line.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So that's possible then?
CR, yeah, sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's CR, but it still has to go through the process. You know,
I also had a question of whether it could be a casino or not, I think. You'd have to get a license, of course. Licensing, of course.
There's a lot involved with, I think, with that ever happening.
Yeah. So. I have the question, so I have to ask the experts.
Right. But again, it's one of those. It's generally, you know, shopping center doesn't get built until you actually have your anchor. Otherwise, you're not going to be able to get the financing to build it. So they're not going to build an empty building and have it sit there.
But did your study, though, talk about the critical mass of similar retail will benefit because of the proximity to each other, and let me finish it, and then in that same paragraph, I think, says, would have the ability to draw customers from further distances. Is that
right? I mean, our primary trade area, as we defined it, is roughly about 5 to 6 miles in diameter, based on the road networks.
Well, that's what the opposition has been citing, is the concern is traffic, and you're talking about this type of thing, critical mass of similar retail would draw customers from further. That would add to the traffic, existing traffic, bringing more people to the site.
No more than
like a Target. A Target will draw them from further away than something else.
It could potentially, but it could also help keep residents here instead of driving to Dover or Salisbury. So, I'm not a traffic expert, so I can't talk about traffic impacts.
And then you also talked about the competition being the Vineyards, which is not under construction. So if both of these are competing, you're saying there's enough growth in this area?
Well, currently,
future growth, you think, that's going to be able to support two projects that are actually promoting similar types of stores and similar type everything, about the same?
Yeah, potentially, yes.
You think?
I mean, you know,
I guess it's a guess.
I mean, they might say that, you know, there could be some stores on Route 1 that do go dark. I would argue, however, that if there are stores going dark in Route 1, it's probably because that shopping center probably needs to be redeveloped. So somebody else has a better shopping center that people are more attracted to. So you're going to have reuse of the poor performing shopping center down the road.
Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Mr. Evers, John.